This is Gemma Redgrave, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 384 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where your past always catches up with you. But if you play your cards right, you'll confront your past with a few fistfights and a fair bit of sexual tension and get returned right back to where you started. Nice. I'm Haley.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Kier. This week, season two of Torchwood kicks off with enough drama, innuendo, tension, sarcasm, and violence to fill in all those missing bits from season one. The aptly titled Kiss Kiss Bang Bang brings a lot to the table, so let's just see if the table is large enough to hold it all and still seat everybody. Did you miss me? This is what we knew Torchwood to be, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
This is kind of the energy level, all the stuff. Jay, once it started running, like once the episode started kicking in and you got through the opening, you know, the blowfish in the convertible sequence, did you remember exactly where we were?
Not until James Marshers popped up.
Okay.
Like, as soon as he showed up, I was like, oh, okay, now I remember. I mean, who can forget Spike?
Precisely. And there's so much wrapped around that. Haley, what was your dawning familiarity as you started going through a rewatch on this?
So I remembered that the season started with Jack gone and coming back and trying to work his way back into the team. And that was about it. And then I remembered that we couldn't trust Spike, but I didn't remember the details of the story.
Okay. I was trying to, without looking at any synopsis or anything, after we had wrapped up the end of days for the close of season one, I was racking my brain thinking, all right, we keep joking about the fact that we keep retconning ourselves on this show, but where do things start from season two? And I'm just thinking about it. Like, well, I remember it was pretty engaging and it felt like a very different, or at least a more amped up show from that point onward. But I can't remember the plot line, huh? Because I know it's about mid-season when John Hart comes into the story, right? That's about mid-season, right?
Well, yes and no.
Yeah, so not so much. I had completely forgotten that it hits the ground running quite this early. So, All right, there's a lot going on in here, and some of it is familiar, and some of it is a little bit out of the blue and leaves you kind of wondering, whoa, wait a second, can we expound on that little thing a little bit before you move on to the next sex joke or what have you? So let's parse this thing.
So how was rehab?
Rehabs, plural.
Drink, drugs, sex, and
murder.
You went to murder rehab?
I know, ridiculous. The odd kill. Who does it hurt?
You clean now?
Yeah, kicked everything. Living like a priest.
So, how's the time agency?
You didn't hear. It's shut down.
You're kidding.
No. There's only 7 of us left now.
Wow.
It's good to see you. It was never the same without you.
You need to go. I don't want you on my territory.
What?
Notice your writing credits. This is Chris Chibnall writing.
I did notice that.
Yeah. Chibnall writing a snappy episode like this. Who knew he had it in him? But this was supposed to be RTD's pen. And he, here's the kicker. He wrote the opening sequence, the cold open.
Nice.
So, you know, shooting a blowfish in the head. That was RTD, and the rest of the story is entirely Chibnall. I find that hilarious, personally. But you both mentioned the spike factor and that kind of thing. But this, am I the only one that feels like this, on so many levels, screams Sunnydale?
Maybe it's been a while since I've watched Buffy, but I'm not getting it.
That might have a little to do with this. Like, they're more of a Scooby gang in this episode. You know, the team in general is getting along better than at any point that we saw in the first season.
Mm. But I'm thinking also, it's absolutely true. I mean, there's, well, it's sort of a forced improvement in team dynamic because of the fact that Jack was the absent father, so to speak. But from the dialogue, and just the acidity and sort of the sharpness of the comebacks, and the fact that when somebody starts kind of running with a joke, usually John, and he's kind of throwing it at somebody, someone else tries to steer the conversation back and say, no, this is serious, we need to talk about this. And he just gets another one-liner and another one-liner and another one-liner, and like never lets up until someone either, you know, punches him or, you know, whatever, you know, drags him out of the scene. Mm-hmm. That reminded me a lot of Buffy at its most cracking. Just the pace and the snappiness of the dialogue had a very Whedon-esque feel to it. So it just almost made me wonder whether Chibnall was on a bit of a Whedon binge watch at the time.
Yeah, I guess that's I didn't consider it that way. But like I said, it's been a while since I watched Buffy.
Mm, okay. One thing that I guess you could also sort of dovetail into Buffiness, with a few small exceptions, is the fact that in this particular story, I kind of feel like it's attempting to, as we alluded to in the introduction, boil down a lot of the greatest hits from season one, the things that proved very successful.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of get a recipe going here. That recipe being this blend of the sex, the violence, the language, all the things that make this Doctor Who After Dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like it had a balance in all these things as far as, you know, we make sure that we have all five or all six of our key ingredients? Or did it feel like because of the fact that, you know, this was the Jack and John story, that it was overtly, all right, we're gonna lean hard into the sex and just the little puns and the double entendres and things like that, or how did the overall tone of this leave you feeling?
I think it worked much better than whatever they were attempting in season one, where they would like occasionally hit you over the head with, "Hey, this is an adult show," and then just go off in some random direction. Like this, it felt like part of the story this time in a way that it never really did in season one.
You think that's because they just didn't let up on it, and they sort of made that the crux of, well, yeah, pretty much the crux of the story, rather than just something that they peppered throughout?
Possibly.
I think it has more to do with it was just a better structured story. Like, because the bones of the story were better, you could do more with it.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's a definite advantage to having a new character introduced who spends the vast majority of the screen time knowing that he can't be trusted, but nonetheless being relied upon for things that I think, as Jack says, this may be the one, forget exactly how he phrased it, the one flaw in his persona that actually allows him to speak the truth for once. But that's interesting, right? I mean, that's kind of engaging. He's not a villain.
Mm-hmm.
He's another sort of like-minded con man, as Jack has slowly now been exposing himself to be by his own admission. And that's the choice of words that John uses for him too, which is kind of interesting. So that, I think that gives you the underpinnings of something where even if the story didn't really go anywhere, which it didn't necessarily, because as we mentioned, it kind of loops back on itself. And you're like, okay, well, here's as if it never happened.
Until the last 5 seconds.
Yeah, poof. But it didn't feel like it robbed you of anything. I felt genuinely entertained throughout, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the aspects of this where either from its execution or its ambition that you could see it learning from mistakes in season shortcomings in season one. Haley, you said something, obviously just taking the tension moments, or taking the high drama moments and tapering up and down from them so that they weren't just these plateaus of let's have a calm conversation, then let's be really passionate and angry about stuff, and then go back to our calm conversations again. That's definitely improved. Are there other things that you could see were a definite, hey, we learned from the first round?
I think a big one is in season one, there were a lot of times where it's like, this episode is this person's episode. So they will be in this episode and everyone else just has to kind of disappear for the week. So this week is a Jack episode. We're getting Jack's backstory, which is always when Torchwood is strongest because that there's a lot of interesting things there. But everybody else has a role in this episode. And I think they made the wise decision to have less Owen and more Yanto.
That's true.
That was definitely noticeable in this one.
Yanto was definitely put in a position of weakness throughout this particular story, though. He spent a lot of time rocked back on his heels because John really knew how to, A, push his buttons and keep him from feeling too confident about his role within the team. You know, he had everybody pegged from very early on. But as far as also seeing him as a bit of an immediate threat to this relationship that he didn't necessarily want to rekindle, but he wasn't really willing to let go of. This was his relationship with Jack was an asset, right? Something he could tap into when he needed to accomplish what he needed. And Yanto was a bit of a challenge to that, or an obstacle to how effective that particular bit of ammunition was. So really kind of unfortunate for the character, but it does allow us to see the fact that Jack is now trying to reciprocate a lot of the affection and emotions that Yanto is developing for him, or was trying to develop for him until he disappeared for a year. Is that how we're assuming he was gone for about a year's time?
They never really said specifically.
Well, here's what I was trying to figure out. So, all right, there's the Doctor Who stories that take Jack and put him back down on the record, right? When the needle comes up on Torchwood and drops him into Doctor Who, as you were saying last week, Jay, this is a Sound of the Drums and Last of the Time Lords, right? The Sim Master stuff. And that is supposed to take place chronologically a year in advance of the current viewing time, right? That aired in whatever 2007. I'm just picking a number here because I honestly don't recall. And it was supposed to take place a year into the future. And here we see present day. So that's how my congonculations are saying, okay, Jack walks away from that scene and steps back to Cardiff for this present day. So that puts me at a year. My thought. Which would kind of make sense as far as how far the team has progressed on. They had to rebuild the hub. They had to, come up with all these systems in place. They've been doing some tech development, rift prediction algorithms. What's that all about? But do you feel then, mentioning the stepping out of Doctor Who and back into Torchwood, that for the many, many, the growing list of people who said, oh no, I found Torchwood first. That this felt comfortable as far as there's allusions to something that they may not know of.
It definitely left a question mark there. You know, it's like, all he says is, I found my doctor, and it's like, well, did he fix you? And it's like, there was no real. It was just kind of a throwaway line. Like, okay, everybody knows what we're referring to, but not everybody did. So I think that there could have been a little bit more explained there, but definitely don't like give the whole story. But just the fact that it was just a kind of like a one-off line just left a little bit wanting.
Do you think there's a rationale for why they wouldn't just explicitly or sort of implicitly dance a little bit closer to the origin program?
I think at this point, like, if you're somebody that's going to watch Doctor Who, then you did during that gap. And if you're not going to go watch Doctor Who at this point, then they really don't want to have to tell you this whole story, which isn't really going to have an impact on the Torchwood stories going forward.
Hmm.
True.
So they thread that needle between referencing it in such a vague way that the people who are in the know get it, and it's enough to sort of satisfy them, or at least say, okay, you're not trying to pretend it doesn't exist, but we're never going to say his name. We're never going to see a TARDIS. We're never going to, you know, like they wouldn't even play the entire Vorp sound when it starts to materialize in the hub in the previous episode. So,
yeah, I don't know. I definitely wish that there had been a little bit more explained there, but I'm fine with the fact that it was left. There was a question mark left there. I just wish it wasn't such a big one.
Mm. It's one of many questions that they've kind of thrown at us, because with this, you know, we're going to, let me just continue to call it a year, just for sake of moving through it. In the year that's passed, we've seen all of these changes occur. Torchwood going through its little physical revamp just shows that, at least from a budgetary perspective and things, the optioning the show for a second season says, okay, well, we can do a bit of a set redesign, and we've got it in the budget for that. We're going to stick this one out. Where, you know, we may see it well beyond a second season. I'm going to have to go back and look and see whether or not when they renewed it, whether they knew that they were going to be renewing it through a third season, because obviously our third season is a bit of a mini series in its execution. But we'll have to see. I want to go back and find out exactly how those pieces fell into place. But then even on a character level, they decide to make the jump about Gwen and Rhys. You know, get those two engaged now.
Yeah.
So that's...
I love how the story of the engagement or the proposal was like, well, he got down on one knee, but then he twinged his back. And
he tried.
It's like, yeah, no, that sounds like Rhys. That's exactly it.
But that does mean that this whole idea of sort of the developing secondary story or even tertiary story about keeping Rhys from knowing too much about Gwen's work is now going to be amped up a little further, right? Because it's going to be a little bit more difficult if that even is maintained. Foreshadowing. We're also then handed all this cool stuff that has a very Doctor Who feel to it. When John starts giving all this exposition about, and then Jack sort of reciprocates and hands some of the storyline over from the opposite perspective about what they used to be, who they used to be, what they used to do, and all these interesting little facts, right? The time agency gets this explicit mention now, and these time agents, which we don't even necessarily know how trustworthy or how goody-goody this group really was, because they all seem to be right jerks.
And that's one of the things that I do enjoy, is the fact that it's not, you get the sense that, you know, they're called the Time Agency, and it seems official and whatnot. So in your brain, you kind of want to think, oh, it's some kind of official service or something that this, and the more you learn about it, the more you're like, it doesn't really seem to fit that mold. And I like that it's kept nebulous and you're just always kind of wondering.
Yeah. Between that and the fact that once John shares with them that it's been disbanded or dissolved or what have you, and that there are seven of them left, that starts leaving me to think of things like the Inquisitors. You know, this is Seventh Sister and Second Sister and things like that. I'm like, ooh, well, who are the other ones? So that's I always enjoy those aspects of world building, that even if they never get resolved, because it just makes you feel like this is a far richer tapestry that you're experiencing than just what's on the surface. But there's, I guess the things that they're trying to set in motion, I almost felt at a certain point, like this episode was trying to say, hey, here's shades of things to come for the rest of this entire season. Jack's back, but the team doesn't trust him. But Gwen and Rhys are developing their relationship. And oh, look, Tosh and Owen are sort of kind of like spiraling around one another, but it's still in this baby stages. And Yanto and Jack's relationship are starting to gel a little bit. Oh, and then there's all this other stuff. this almost seems like they are just laying out the menu for us, not to its detriment, not in any way to detract from the story, but it was definitely, it felt very spoon-feeding at times, insofar as saying, while you're enjoying this, make sure that you make notes of all of these things that we're handing to you, because these are going to be important later. Take notes, kids. Did anyone else get that feel?
Yes. I also felt like with this episode, they were kind of trying to reset the stage for anybody that might have skipped the first season and was just coming on board now.
What kind of moments were giving you that particular impression?
Well, specifically when Jack walks into the room and he's telling John, I can't die. Just explicitly saying it, not toying with him or anything. Like, we want to make sure you and the audience knows that this is a fact of our show going forward. There were a few moments like that. And I remember thinking that when I watched, and I don't remember them off the top of my head right now.
And expressing that in full knowledge of the assembled team, too. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm not sure if this has ever been anything, like, he sort of danced around it. Maybe a couple of them have mentioned it to him, but it just isn't talked about. And now it's just stated fact. So that's an interesting thing to work with, too. Yeah. Mm. The team dynamic is definitely shifting. I like the fact that the team has had this time to work without him, because now this means that a lot of the pecking order nonsense that was happening in the first season can be put to rest. So if we can, if we can just take care of the, let everybody else who hasn't slept with each other now sleep with each other. Everybody get all out of your system, you know, as you normally do with any team of five, of course. And then we can move on with
I believe John had a solution to this orgy.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I wish that we had seen a little bit more of the team without Jack, though. Like, it seemed like he came back really quickly. And I get that, you know, they need him in the story and whatnot, but I almost wish that we'd had, like, an episode showing the struggles that they're going through instead of just having it mentioned, you know?
That's a really good point. I think that would have been pretty beneficial, because they still could have had, they could have hammered this one in as an episode two. Well, I guess there's a bit of a catch. You need to make sure that you're going to capture your viewers for the run of the second season, right? So you got to come out of the gate strong. If they were going to have one story that was just the human team, the mortal team, it would have to be one hell of a story to still really capture, as you mentioned, viewers that didn't really tune in much for season one, and this is giving them a little bit of a recap. It would have to be pretty strong to say, all right, I'll watch next week, and then get them to the Jack and John story. So
I think that episode would have ended the way the teaser ended, which is Jack takes the shot and everyone's like, oh, he's back. And then, you know, more credits.
Exactly.
Well, hindsight, I suppose.
Yeah. No, but all in all, you know, it started off the series strong, and it was, you know, it was fantastic for what it was. Like, I mean, you look at series one and all the, I mean, how many times were we like, yeah, it was all right, but it wasn't what we were expecting. This is what we were expecting. This is what we remember Torchwood to be.
Yeah.
Also, they were using much better cameras this season.
You think so? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they've sort of proven that they can work with the A team budget rather than the B team audio video equipment. No, I'm sorry. We're using that stuff over in the Doctor Who set. You guys get last year's cameras.
Yeah, we've got some cameras somewhere on the bottom underneath those wigs. You can have those.
Well, we spent a lot of the season one rewatch, you know, ranking the episodes against each other, as you mentioned, Jane. Like, this one was clearly a sleeper episode. This one was one that really kind of, you know, hit the creep factor, so on and so on. And we sort of ranked them all against one another, respective to that season. Would it be safe to say that kicking off season two, they're giving us a story that shines as well as, if not potentially brighter than, the vast majority of season one in total? Would that be valid?
With a few notable exceptions, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we did have a couple episodes in series one that were really, really good. But are we talking average? Then yeah, probably.
I guess it kind of goes back to that secret recipe sort of idea. You know, I think this is a story that actually does make a cognizant effort of saying, we not only need to make sure that we're hitting all these things, but we're giving each of them, back to Haley's original point, that each one of them has a recognizable and justifiable reason for being there. Yeah, there's a lot of sexual tension because of this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, there's some vulgarity because these people are genuinely upset with one another enough to justify it, so they're not just peppering it with F-bombs for the sake of being edgy. Yeah, there's some techno babble because there's these radiation bombs. Just going, radiation bombs. Oh boy. So all the key components that make the show engaging when it's really firing in all pistons are happening often enough that they're not just stuck on like, we haven't cursed in 10 minutes. Somebody stubbed their toe, you know, or yeah, what have you. So yeah. Haley, what's your kind of walk away from this as far as comparing this episode to the overall average tone and execution of season one stories?
I think it goes with whatever that top tier of season one is, that's where this episode goes.
Okay.
Like, it's not necessarily better than every episode, but it's definitely up there with the best.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the follow-up question is, can they maintain that kind of quality of execution? I do remember, again, I don't remember details, but I do remember that there were a couple of stories in season two that you said, all right, this was one where it was concept. You know, they were attempting something and it, you know, didn't necessarily land quite right. But I always, we keep joking about this. Season two was supposed to be the one where it didn't have all the shock and awe factor of season three, but it was just good television.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, my fuzzy, hazy memory being what it is, I remember season two being much stronger than season one and rewatchable in a way that season three is not.
Well, season three, not rewatchable because why would you do that to yourself?
We say right before we do that to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone's got to swallow the bitterest pills once in a while. Yeah. So yeah, I'm pleased that we're starting to get into this leg of the rewatch because this is these become ones where it's not a matter of, oh yeah, oh, you look at the synopsis and say, oh yeah, that's the one we're going to watch this week. It's the, ooh, I remember that being pretty interesting. Let's see if my memory holds up.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Anyone else a little disappointed they didn't suggest cutting off his hand when he cuffed himself to Gwen?
A little bit,
the
yeah.
The little things. Yeah, the Occam's razor could have made a nice hand-cutting tool, I suppose. We have always long held that the history of Doctor Who, the underpinnings of this program, was not necessarily to be a children's show, but was meant to be a program that was for family consumption, all ages, something that every member of the family could sit down at the couch or on the floor on a Saturday evening, watch the story, maybe spark some conversation, and everybody of all the different demographics around the room could get something out of it for different reasons. Specifically for the kids who were, you know, part of that consuming audience, it was supposed to be about giving them oogie monsters to scare them behind the couch every once in a while. And, oh, heck, I don't know, maybe teach them something about science or history or something like that along the way, because then the parents feel like they're getting something beneficial out of it. Well, to drive that point home, it looks like the BBC is specifically putting together packaging particular stories and episodes as educational resources for that very reason. And I think this is long overdue. Maybe they've done it before, but I really like the way that they're particularly putting this together as sort of like a something you can fit into a scholastic curriculum.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really get a chance to go over this, but it sounds like it's going to be, it sounds interesting. I'm definitely going to have to look into it further.
Yes. I mean, think about if you were to take some of the stories from one of the more recent seasons that we really enjoyed, like Demons of the Punjab or Rosa or something like that. You could take some of the historical adventures and put those out there. Or even if you wanted to do any of the stories from a scientific measure that had to do with, you know, manipulation of planetary orbit or something like that. We might not want to take, you know, the moon as an egg or something like that, but, you know, you see where I'm going with this. But yeah, I think that's a great thing to put together, and it's going to be particularly interesting knowing that, as we saw from the last couple of seasons, that I think Chibnall has a specific point in his execution to look back at the way the classics were done, as far as I need to make sure that I have a good balance of traveling through history, traveling through time, traveling through space, traveling through, sort of this. It takes your pseudoscience every once in a while, but let's make sure that we've got something that really can spark interest once the credits have rolled. Go seek something else out. You know, in his particular case, in this most recent season, has to do with things with the environment. It seems to be something that is very, very top of mind for him, right? So whether it's Praxeus or stories like that, or even taking something to the distant future and seeing, oh, well, the future of mankind, you screwed up all your resources and look at you humans now, you're a hot mess, are all still going back to that. So it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
I'm going to hand this next one over to the two of you, because I'm still formulating my opinions on it, and they're problematic, but I do want to make sure that it gets fair discussion. And that has to do with, as we mentioned last week, that they were not going to be doing the last of the lockdown tweet-alongs, because the two stories that they had chosen to cover were not good exemplifications of Black representation in the program, particularly at this point in time, especially at this point in time. But they did release this extra bit of content, this epilogue that mm-hmm. Stephen Moffat has written that, correct me if I'm wrong, is going to be the last thing he writes.
Yeah, yes, that's what he said. Although that's what he said multiple times by now, but he's really like, he's like, no, this is what I'm leaving on. This is where I make my exit. So we will see how that goes. But yeah, Haley, have you had a chance to watch the Best of Days?
I have not.
Okay. So Haley's going to get a chance to absorb this, just as you are, listeners, if you haven't already. It's only a couple minutes long.
Yeah. And it is a simple kind of audio thing, just a conversation or an exchange of messages between Nardal and Bill. And it does a great job of kind of, you know, making things lighthearted and bringing these characters back to life, while also recognizing some of the real world events that are going on right now that are so challenging and that make the need for a change like this, where, you know, we can't watch the episodes we were planning. But it does kind of shine the spotlight on current events, which Doctor Who has a long tradition of doing, mm-hmm. and doing so in a way that kind of, ties it into characters that you already know and love.
So that we're not spoiling anything for anyone, Haley included. This is obviously something where the idea of Bill being referenced at a point where Black Lives Matter is at the forefront of everyone's thoughts and actions and social media interaction right now is understandable. The fact that all of the proceeds, there are requested donations being made through the close of this video segment for any number of organizations that Pearl Mackey hand selected. So that's an effort being made to connect not only the content of these pieces of the universe to it, but trying to make sure that positive change is enacted as a result of our enjoyment and consumption of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some issues with it that I'd be more than willing to discuss with people online if they want to take it up. But I think I'm a little concerned about the ask that was made of Pearl to do this, not to the extent of tokenization, but mm-hmm. Joy Piedmont, our friend from Reality Bomb, put it so succinctly that it was sort of an emotional burden to have her take this on, but then not even to go to the length of saying within the nature, they sort of danced around why or what was being referred to. It was, at times it was just saying, you know, there's a lot of trouble down here, here on Earth. There's a lot of people that, that need to work on things. You know, it's like it, it kind of almost sort of pussyfooted around it a little bit and kind of kept eggshells rather than just saying, no, there's people angry about race and so forth. And I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't necessarily expecting her to jump forward and say, you know, George Floyd or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know if it went far enough to be able to really hammer it home. Maybe to a certain degree, that's because Stephen Moffat as a writer knows that there are certain things that he should not be explicitly writing about. You know, you mm-hmm. because maybe it's just not his place to. It's not his voice that, that needs the amplification right now. But I don't know. It's a gray area that I'm still, as I said, I'm still not 100% determined what I think of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like it was kind of left nebulous because, I mean, you think about a lot of times where, you know, the current political climate and things like that have weighed in on this, the scripts of Doctor Who, and it's usually something that is, you know, themes and things like that, that that don't really get, oh, well, it's, you know, this group over here did the thing. No, it's, you know, it's more the, you know, there's a lot more just generalization to it. So, mm-hmm. and that's one of the reasons why we can go back and watch a classic story today and still enjoy it, because it's drawing really close parallels to what we're going through at the moment and things like that. Whereas if you said, you know, this is the, you know, the riots, the Black Lives Matter movement, things like that, if you name George Floyd, it locks it into this time period. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that can age very well.
I understand your point. Well, leave that to our listeners to chime in on, because this is obviously something, you know, we're absolutely happy to have the conversation with you. We've been having this conversation in a lot of circles, and we invite you to be a part of it. So feel free to chat with us either through the podcast social media channels or with us directly as well. You know, our handles and hooks are out there too. So feel free mm-hmm. To ping us on it.
Yeah.
One other thing, you know, speaking of Bill, mm-hmm. one other thing that we did also get that I think is a really interesting sort of evening reading kind of thing is the original script for the girl with the star in her eye, which later became the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit different of a story as far as some of the ways that it was executed. And there's a lot of things that were left out maybe for, you know, abridging it for screenplay execution or what have you, or maybe just because they wanted to go after a slightly different tone and beats through it. But I'm really interested to hear, maybe not, you know, 12th Doctor playing a VR game running around with a chainsaw, but additional scenes having to do with the Doctor helping Bill cope with her, with the memories of her mother. Things like that, you know, mm-hmm. those really strong points from that episode that were really heartbreaking. I want more of this. So I'm really glad we've got this. It's kind of cool to see how it transitioned from original script to final cut, final filmed cut.
And thankfully we got some, I don't know if this is confirmed or leaked or however we want to categorize it, but we've got news that the upcoming holiday episode won't be delayed because of coronavirus.
Yeah, I guess it emerged from an Entertainment Weekly with Mandeep Gill. And some of it had to do with Doctor Who through the course of the interview, and some of it had to do with the fact that she's working on some additional projects right now, as they all are, or at least there are some projects that are currently in hiatus. But you know, she's doing other work. But they led the whole conversation off with assuring the interviewer, and in turn assuring us as the consuming audience, that their holiday episode is completely shot and effectively in the can and just doing its post-production, which we had kind of assumed.
Mm-hmm.
But that just means at this point, everything's done but the release date. You know, it's all done but the marketing at this point.
Thankfully, we know that, you know, we'll at least have one episode of Doctor Who to look forward to at the end of the year. So,
well, or the first day of the new year, depending on what they decide.
That time
somewhere
frame.
Around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, wibbly wobbly. It's,
I don't know, but, you know, especially after this drought, not specifically with Doctor Who, because this is, it's not really that much of a different duration. But as far as new programming, man, if they've got something that they're holding on to and you can give it to me even a week sooner, gimme.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm rewatching everything at this point, because the only new stuff that's coming out right now are animated features, because that's all you could work on right now. Or mm-hmm. or these sort of homegrown things like the, I don't know if you've seen, have either of you seen this project that David Tennant and Michael Sheen are working on?
Staged? Yes.
Does this not look brilliant? I think I had just seen a quick article go by. We won't include it in the news just because it's just in passing. But I guess since they shoot these things in their flats or in their, you know, wherever their homes are, and Tennant has so much Doctor Who stuff around his house and in his back garden and stuff that it actually gets worked into the script. I love this. I love it. It's like half improv. It's brilliant. Yeah.
It's going to be great.
So what you're saying is when we were doing our at-home Doctor Who episode casting, we could have just cast David Tennant.
Yes.
Hey, I did cast David Tennant.
Yeah, David Tennant as David Tennant and Donald
and the 10th Doctor.
And the 10th Doctor. And a couple of Ood. And.
I mean, he's got enough kids. He can have a whole cast. It's fine.
Yeah. Isn't his eldest son getting into acting now?
Yes.
So
I mean, we could have the Doctor's daughter in the episode.
Precisely. And the 5th Doctor comes trundling through. Yeah, do Time Crash Part 2.
Right.
Oh, Time Crash Part 2.
Oh, great. We got him started.
Oh, no, I got to go call Andy Hicks. This is important.
I'm SP from the GuineaGeek.com show, a weekly geek news podcast that is part of the GuineaGeek.com network. Just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other amazing geek shows at GuineaGeekNetwork.com.
Next week, we're going to be coming back with something, a little twist on something we've done before.
Yeah. If you remember, we did the deemed worthwhile rewatch of Curse of the Black Spot. We had decided that we were going to, every once in a while, if the mood struck us, we would take a story that was being historically kind of panned for whatever reason, primarily Modern Who, and we'll stick to that. But we would, being the positive, you know, Pollyanna optimist that we typically are, we would look at these malign stories and say, no, there's a lot you can take out of this that really make it a decent view and something you can enjoy even just one more time, right? So we did that for Curse of the Black Spot, and I think we found some interesting stuff when we went through that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have here, I want to try to keep this dynamic. So I'm going to ask Jay to flip a coin, which is going to narrow my list of four potential stories down to two. And then I will ask Haley to flip a coin and narrow that two down to one. So, Jay, why don't you give me heads or tails?
Heads.
Okay. Heads narrows us down to two. Haley, heads or tails?
Heads.
Heads. All right. Two-part story. This is Daleks in Manhattan and Evolution of the Daleks.
Oh, God.
You see? That's the knee-jerk reaction.
No, my reaction is, don't remember.
I remember.
The Dalek hybrid.
The pigman.
Don't remember.
Okay.
See, she's better off, and we're going to punish her now. Is this really what you want to do, Kier?
Yes. So for next week, go ahead, kids. Go, if you got your HBO Max, that's great. If you have your DVDs, great. Grab your...
Speaking of HBO Max, are you guys aware that it doesn't work on most of the set-top boxes? Great launch, HBO.
Watch for a BBC contract renegotiation next year.
But for me, this is like getting new episodes of Doctor Who.
Right? Oh, man. Well, this has been episode 384 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, hey, guys, Jack's back. Jeff, sushi, anyone?
Ooh. This is Kier saying, I'm really excited. I am starting my first time agent training course on Monday. It's an intro to sexual innuendo at gunpoint.
And this is Haley saying, blowfish!
We'll see you guys next week.
And we'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2020. See you next week.